Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. President Obama is speaking right now. We'll play a clip in a minute. He is apparently announcing a proposal for Congress to repeal oil company subsidies. And we'll play a clip as soon as he finishes the thought and talk about it with Chief White House correspondent, Chief Washington correspondent, I should say, for the New York Times and WNYC contributor David Sanger. We'll also talk about President Obama's trip, including his open mic gaffe to Seoul, South Korea, to talk about nuclear weapons. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be with you, Brian.
And, you know, whoever thought a trip halfway around the world to talk about nuclear war would be considered a relief, but maybe with the Supreme Court pressure cooker going on here on his health care law, it was.
Yeah, it could well have been. He actually was going over there to talk about nuclear security, the one thing everybody can actually agree is probably a good thing. But that wasn't where the headlines were, for sure.
No, and here's where the headlines were. The audio of the president with the open mic to Medvedev, the president of Russia. Listeners, we're going to play this, and you have to listen carefully, but check it out. The president says that he's going to have more flexibility on the issue of missile defense after he's reelected. And like a good soldier, Medvedev says, I'll tell Vladimir. So listen.
This is my last election. Yeah. And after my election, I have more flexibility.
Yeah, I understand. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Alexander.
So, David Sanger, what was the president actually saying there?
I think what he was saying was that after he doesn't have to worry about being in front of the voters, he can pursue an agenda that he's already sort of publicly described, which is reducing the number of American nuclear weapons on their way down to what he hopes will be a very small number. Whether he does that unilaterally or only in negotiation with the Russians is a big issue, and ultimately with the Chinese. And the second thing I think he was saying was that he'll have probably more latitude on the question of missile defense. Both of those issues are very easy issues for whoever his opponent would be, and we presume at this point to be Mitt Romney, to sort of stand up and talk about how a president is weakening the United States and so forth. I mean, this is sort of more like the debates that took place in the 1960 elections than something you'd imagine for 2012. But I think what the president was indicating was once the election's behind him, there's all sorts of things he can do. And that's true of any politician.
1960 or maybe 1980, because remind us of this missile defense issue. This was derisively called Star Wars in the Reagan era. What exactly is the U.S. doing that Russia wants us to change?
Well, it's important not to confuse missile defense with Star Wars. Star Wars was a concept during the Reagan administration that some believe Ronald Reagan either thought was imminent or maybe was already deployed, that involved, you know, lasers zapping missiles from, you know, out deep into outer space and so forth. What's being set up around Eastern Europe and particularly in the Gulf is something far more prosaic. It is missiles that go after short and medium range missiles, not big ballistic missiles. They're designed to contain Iran. There's a similar system in the Pacific for North Korea. And these are, I wouldn't say 100% by any means tested, but they have had significantly higher success rates because it's a much lower tech concept than what Star Wars was. They also are not at all effective against an overwhelming missile attack. And so one of the arguments about why Russia has very little to be concerned about this is, given the size of Russia's arsenal, they could overwhelm a system like this with ease. These are really designed to pick off ones and twos and threes of missiles being shot over a short range.
So why does Russia have a problem with it?
Russia has a problem with it because they believe that this system, while ostensibly aimed at containing Iran could also in some way contain them, and that they see a line here where the United States is helping put missile systems in the former Soviet republics, and that's always been an issue that has gotten the Russians quite upset. There was a proposal during the Bush administration, which never went anywhere, to put the missile defense system inside Russia, so that there's no way it could be used against Russia and then have it contain the Iranians. In the end, that idea didn't go anywhere.
Many presidents, many other politicians get caught in these open mic moments, not realizing that they're being heard by others. Didn't Reagan once do a mic check in which he said something like, the Soviet Union has been outlawed, the missiles will be leaving in 5 minutes, or something like that?
The bombing begins, and I can't remember if it was 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but yes, he did that as a joke. You'll remember that George W. Bush was caught with an open mic talking to Dick Cheney about one of my colleagues, a reporter who was in the crowd, had some unpleasant things to say about him.
A word we can't repeat on the radio,
that's right. There were moments in the Obama administration where Vice President Biden described something with another word we can't use on the radio as a big deal. So there have been lots of open mic moments, and you know, with boom microphones all around, people should just learn that when you're out in public, particularly at summits or in the East Room, you shouldn't say anything.
Yeah, wasn't it health reform that Biden called a blanking big deal?
That's right. And, you know, the Supreme Court is proving this week that he was right. It is a big deal.
He was right. And so if somebody is right, then they don't get in too much hot water for it. Usually an open mic remark gets you in trouble if it's something very blue or if you take a different position than what you say in public when other people are listening. So did the president...
Well, that could be, Brian, but I'd also argue that at times the biggest gaffe one makes in Washington is when they say something that's true that they've never said before. So, you know, the president about 2 months ago was at a Google event, and he started talking about drones. There's nothing that he said that was wrong. It's just that American officials don't talk about the drone campaign, the CIA drone campaign. But there he was talking about it. And when I asked one of their aides about it later on, they said, well, you know, I guess if the president talks about it, it's just been declassified.
Mm. They should talk with their baseball mitts over their mouths like they do on the mound so the other team can't see. But was the president contradicting himself, his official policy, in any way by kind of being soft, or was it a negotiation failure of a sort? Aren't we supposed to be making a deal with Russia for loosening missile defense in exchange for something else? Or, you know, what did he? How did he hurt anything? Hurt anybody? Hurt the U.S. position by saying what he said?
I don't think he did, because I think the Russians understood this already, which is that you can't go into a negotiation on where you're setting your arsenal during an election year. Even if these are the kinds of negotiations that Democrats and Republicans have pursued. And in fact, the reduction that George Bush did with the Russians in 2002 was significantly, to my mind, was a significantly greater cut than the one that President Obama announced when he did the New START treaty just 2 years ago. So, you know, there's a oddity here that in an election year, you don't want to get into one of these negotiations simply because whatever position you settle on, your opponent's going to find a way of making the case that you've made American defenses weaker, which may or may not be the case.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and WNYC contributor, as we talk about President Obama's trip to talk about nuclear arms in Seoul, South Korea. And in a minute, we'll play a clip from the statement that he made a moment ago on energy and oil company subsidies. But as you said, he did not go to Seoul to make headlines about what he promised Medvedev quietly under the table. So what was the headline supposed to be? What did he actually go to Seoul to do with respect to nuclear war? And did they do it?
Well, this was the second in a series of what they've now set up to be three summits, but this the first one took place 2 years ago here in Washington, and it was called a Nuclear Security Summit, and it is about getting countries, nation by nation, to set goals for sweeping up the loose nuclear material that may be in their country. Some of it is from weapon systems. Much of it is from old nuclear reactors back in the days in the 50s and 60s when people used highly enriched uranium, which you can make bombs out of, to fuel nuclear reactors. They don't do that anymore, by and large, but it used to be very commonplace. Hospital waste that can be used for dirty bombs. So the thought was that in an age of terrorism, the first thing you want to do is sweep up the easy stuff that is much less protected. And by having these summits regularly, you end up setting some deadlines for countries to get this material out of the country. And the Ukraine, for example, has just gotten rid of a very large amount that was left over from their Soviet days. And so just having the summit helps create deadlines to get rid of this material. Now, the reason they settle on nuclear security, Brian, is that it's a lot easier than taking up the hard issues, like what do you do about countries that are producing more bomb material at a moment that President Obama and the 50 other leaders at the summit were sweeping up their old stuff. The number one offender there is Pakistan, which is upgrading its arsenal, and the president said almost nothing about them. The Chinese are improving their arsenal. They may not be increasing the numbers. India may be increasing the numbers. Those are the big problems, particularly Pakistan, that they sort of couldn't touch. And then, of course, you hold it in Seoul, North Korea is always going to be an issue, and was because of their own threat now to set off this rocket satellite launch,
yeah,
which
now,
is clearly right.
Give me a minute on that before we go to energy, because a few weeks ago, there were headlines about North Korea ready to give up nuclear weapons and come in from the cold. Yay. Then they announced these plans for a space launch to commemorate their original dear dictator's 100th birthday that has everyone all inflamed about North Korea and nuclear weapons again. What actually happened there?
Well, Brian, a small correction. The North Koreans only announced 2 weeks ago that they would freeze missile tests and that they would not conduct new nuclear tests. They hadn't yet agreed to give up any of their nuclear stockpile. And for anybody who's lost count, people think they've got between 8 and 12 nuclear weapons based on, you know, 20 years of work that they've done.
It's enough to blow up all the crummy cities of America.
Well, that's probably true.
And the good ones.
We don't actually think they can deliver them to the United States yet, fortunate to say. But they're building bigger and bigger missiles. So they said, we won't do any missile tests. And then they turned around and did something they'd done 2 years ago, which says, of course, none of this affects a civilian satellite test. And, of course, when you launch a small satellite, and they tried this 2 years ago, it fell immediately into the sea, you're launching it on the exact same rocket body that you use for a missile. And as you toss the satellite out, it's very similar to tossing a warhead out. So it's a very good way to test a missile without saying that you're testing a missile. They're not going to be talked out of this, it seems likely, because this is, as you say, the 100th anniversary of the birth of Kim Il-sung, the country's founder. And Kim Jong-un, his grandson, who just took over in December, bears an astounding resemblance when you look at pictures to his grandfather. And they're going to go all out to make him the sort of, you know, the grandson who's in the image of the country's founder.
But does it mean that the optimism that there was maybe just for 5 minutes about Kim Il-sung,
Kim Jong-un,
the new leader, that he might actually, you know, be more reasonable to deal with on the issue of nuclear weapons? Did it all turn out to be a smokescreen because they're going to test the missile anyway, using space, as you described?
I mean, I don't know anybody who was particularly optimistic going into this because nobody's ever made any money betting on a deal with North Korea being sort of, you know, held together.
All right. President Obama. But, I'm sorry, was there a but there?
But if there was any question that the military is still in charge and sort of calling the shots over Kim Jong-un, who we think is in his late 20s, I guess this answered the question.
Now, President Obama, moments ago, making a statement to the press about energy, he said he believes in an all-of-the-above kind of energy policy. We have to do everything we can possibly do. And then he urged Congress to repeal certain tax subsidies that go to the oil companies. And he says Congress has a choice.
They can either vote to spend billions of dollars more in oil subsidies that keep us trapped in the past, or they can vote to end these taxpayer subsidies that aren't needed to boost oil production so that we can invest in the future. It's that simple. And as long as I'm president, I'm betting on the future. And as the people I've talked to around the country, including the people who are behind me here today, they put their faith in the future as well. That's what we do as Americans. That's who we are.
President Obama moments ago. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. Did he make news there? Is that a new proposal regarding tax subsidies and the oil companies?
No, it's a call for the Congress to end these longstanding subsidies. It's a pure political moment. Obviously, the oil companies lobby very hard for these subsidies. The president's making the point that at these prices for oil, the oil companies have plenty of incentive to go drilling for new oil right now. They don't need government subsidies to go do that. And he's long made the argument that that money should be going into alternative energy research, all kinds of non-carbon-based fuels. It's a very potent political issue right now because with the prices people are paying for gasoline, and then they pick up the paper and they see the kind of profits that the oil companies are making, they're going to think to themselves, I think by and large, the last thing many of these companies need is more support from Washington. But it's going to be very hard to get those subsidies killed off. Many others have tried. The president couldn't get them killed off when the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress.
And at the same time, since this was a political moment, to the criticism that he keeps getting from the Republicans that he's making it harder for oil companies to produce gasoline for America rather than easier as it should be, especially at a time of high gasoline prices, he said this.
I want our kids to be held hostage to events on the other side of the world. I want us to control our own destiny. I want us to forge our own future. And that's why, as long as I'm president, America is going to pursue an all-of-the-above energy strategy, which means we will continue developing our oil and gas resources in a robust and responsible way.
So, David Sanger, in our last minute, what is he doing? What is he doing to enable oil and gas resources to be developed in what he called a robust and responsible way?
Well, this all-of-the-above approach is an effort to make the case that they're pushing for domestic drilling, pushing for greater efficiencies, fuel efficiencies, and energy savings, and also looking for alternative energies. The statistic that the president has going his way is that I think with the exception of 1 year in the past 15 or so, domestic energy production is higher this year than it's been in a long, long time. So it's hard to make the case that...
But Republicans say in spite of the president's policies, not because
of... That's right. That's right. And that trend was on the way during the Bush administration. And, of course, with his refusal to approve the XL pipeline, which, of course, did not come from drilling in the United States, was just moving fuel, you know, across the United States, that has given the Republicans their moment. I think he thinks that the extension of these tax preferences for the oil companies gives him his chance at a moment that it shouldn't be that hard to get voters pretty riled up about oil company profits.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times and WNYC contributor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Up next, why civilian complaints about the NYPD might now be taken more seriously. Stay with us.